भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय माय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् Canto 10, Chapter 21, Verse 11. Dhanyah smamudhagatayo piharinyaita yanandanandanam upatavichitravesham आकर्ण्यवेणुरणितम् सकृष्णसारः पूजां दधुर् विरचिताम् प्रणयावलोकहि धन्यः स्ममूढगतयोऽपि हरिण्येता यानन्दनन्दनमुपात्रविचित्रवेषम् आकर्ण्यवेणुरणितं सह कृष्णसारः पूजां दधुर्विरचितां प्रणयावलोकयि धन्यास्ममूढगतयोऽपि हरिण्येता यानन्दनन्दनमुपात्तविचित्रवेषम् आकर्ण्यवेणुरणितं सह कृष्णसारः पूजां दधुर्विरचितां प्रणयावलोकै धन्यास्ममूढगतयोऽपि हरिण्येता यानन्दनन्दनमुपात्रविचित्रवेषम् आकर्ण्यवेणुरणितं सह कृष्णसारः पूजां दधुर्विरचितां प्रणयावलोकै विरचिता Vaishnavis, fortunate, blessed, sma, certainly, mudhagatayaha, having taken birth in an ignorant animal species, api, although, harinyaha, shidir, etaha, these, ya, who, Nanda Nandanam, the son of Maharaj Nanda, Upata Vichitravesham, dressed very attractively, Akaranya, hearing, Venuranitam, the sound of his flute, Sahakrishna Saraha, accompanied by the black deer, their husbands, Pujam Dadhuhu, they worshipped, Virachitam, performed, Pranayavalokahi, by their affectionate glances. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Translation, blessed are all these foolish deer because they have approached Maharaj Nanda's son, who is gorgeously dressed and is playing on his flute. Indeed, both the doe and the bucks worship the Lord with the looks of love and affection. Purport, this translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada Chaitanya Charitamrit, Madhya 1736. According to the Acharyas, the gopis were thinking as follows. The female deer can approach Krishna along with their husbands, because Krishna is the ultimate object of affection for the male deer. Because of their affection for Krishna, they are encouraged by seeing their wives attracted to him, and thus consider their household lives fortunate. Indeed, they become joyful upon seeing how their wives are searching after Krishna, and following along, they urge their wives to go to the Lord. On the other hand, our husbands are jealous of Krishna, and because of their lack of devotion to him, they cannot even stand to smell his fragrance. Therefore, what is the use of our lives? Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishta Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurau Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsijivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurat Vishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी ऋषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। I seek the blessings of all the senior devotees so that I can try to speak something on this exalted topic from the 10th canto. Hare Krishna. So today, I'll discuss this class in three parts. First, I'll talk about the nature of spiritual vision. Then I'll talk about the nature of spiritual reality. And then I'll talk about how we can cultivate spiritual vision while we are living in our current material reality. So what is the meaning of the nature of spiritual vision? This purport basically is talking about how the gopis are looking at the deer and they are remembering Krishna. So they are seeing the deer, and not only are they seeing the deer, but they are seeing how the deer are seeing Krishna and how the relationship of Krishna and the deer is. And they are comparing that relationship with their relationship with Krishna. And there is almost like a tornado of emotions and memories that is going through their mind because of this. So, this is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Actually, this chapter is the first reference, practically speaking, to the Madhurya Rasa in the 10th canto. This Madhurya Rasa is referred to several times, most prominently from chapters 29 to 33. And again it will be referred to in chapters 46 and 47, where Akrura comes to Vrindavan, and then Akrura delivers the message of Krishna to the gopis in Vrindavan. And once more again it will be referred to in the 65th chapter, where Balram comes to Vrindavan. And once more it will come in the 81st chapter, where the gopis and Krishna meet in Kurukshetra. So the Madhurya Ras is the most exalted of all the rasas, and it is referred to in the Srimad Bhagavatam in these chapters in a concentrated way. That the chapters focus on this, and this has been expanded by our acharyas in a very elaborate way. So the nature of spiritual vision is to be able to connect everything with Krishna. Now, we see that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was actually in the same mood as the gopis, when they were searching for Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he wanted to go to Vrindavan, first immediately after sannyas, and then later on after he somehow managed to get permission from his associates to go. So he was in the mood of the gopis who were searching for Krishna when Krishna had departed from them during the rasa dance. So it is described that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling along, any forest that he would see, he would think of that forest to be Vrindavan. Any river that he would see, he would think of that river to be Jamuna. Any hill that he would see, he would think that to be Govardhan. Now, if we think of it from the objective reality point of view, we know the conditioned soul has four defects. One of the defects is to commit mistakes. And the Supreme Lord, knowledge that comes from him is apaurushya. He doesn't commit any mistakes. So then, now when Lord Chaitanya is seeing some river to be Jamuna, is he committing a mistake? Now, is that river Jamuna or is it not Jamuna? Now, if we say it is not Jamuna, then we imply that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is committing a mistake by considering it to be Jamuna. But if we say it is Jamuna, then is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really thinking of it as Jamuna? If he really thought of it as Jamuna, then he would not keep going further towards Jamuna. Isn't it? So, he sees it as Jamuna, but still he understands also that it is not Jamuna. And he goes towards Jamuna. So, what we consider as factual reality
from our ordinary logical perspective, is not as important in the devotional vision as is one's ability to remember Krishna in everything. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is exalted these glories are described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami because he was able to connect everything with Krishna. So the material reality, we may call it reality in the sense that it exists, but it exists only temporarily. And the existence of any temporary object, it can have only some temporary effect on us. We may get attached to it, we may get entangled in it, we may think of it for some time, obsess over it, and then the object perishes, and we also perish. We, at least in our current bodily conceptions, no longer exist. So, the material reality, when it is seen for what it is at the material level alone, it has some reality, it has some utility, but it is all temporary. The only way this material reality can give us something eternal is when it connects us with the eternal. So, the river in an objective material reality sense is not Jamuna. But, actually everything in this world is meant to ultimately help us remember Krishna. And it has value to the extent that it helps us remember Krishna. So, the nature of the spiritual vision is that one tries to connect everything with Krishna. And to the extent one is successful in making that connection, to that extent one is spiritually advanced. So, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when it is described that the Gopa Kumar went through this whole hierarchy of the levels of devotees, when he finally comes to Vaikuntha, there he meets Lord Vishnu, and then after that he comes to Dwarka, where he meets Krishna in Aishwarya Bhav. Now it's interesting that both the Vaikuntha devotees and the Dwarka devotees, they both consider their respective Lord to be supreme. They don't consider that Vishnu is coming from Krishna, and that Vishnu has only 60 qualities and Krishna has 64 qualities. They don't think that Krishna in Dwarka is in any way inferior to Krishna in Vrindavan. And although Sanatan Goswami has written this book to establish the supremacy of Madhurya Ras in Vrindavan, but he does not, in an objective sense, try to prove that their understanding is wrong. Why? Because there is Tattva and there is Rasa. There are these two fundamental themes within the Vedic discourse. Tattva is concerned with intellectual analysis. And the Bhagavatam actually joins together Tattva and Rasa. Now when you understand truth, then there is meditation, contemplation, analysis. And that is what the first verse of the Bhagavatam ends with. Dhimahi. Dhimahi means meditate. So when there is Tattva, then there is meditation on the Tattva. But when there is Rasa, at that time, there is no meditation in terms of analysis. There is simply relishing. And that's the journey of the Bhagavatam, the third verse of the Bhagavatam. So it first says, okay, we will meditate on the absolute truth. The second verse says, actually there are various ways to approach the absolute truth. And these lower dharmas, dharma projita kaitavotra parmodir matsaramsatam. We give up all the lower ways of meditating on the absolute truth. As the absolute truth as a desire fulfiller, as the maintainer, even as the father. No, these are kaitava dharma. And the third verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Pibata Bhagavatam rasamalayam muhura rasika bhuvi bhavukaha. So become a rasika. So here, the Bhagavatam doesn't say that dhimahi. It says, pibata, drink, and rasika, relish. So there are these two distinct approaches of methods of approaching the absolute truth. One is the analytical method and the other is the aesthetic method. So for example, if there is a beautiful flower. Now, if I approach that flower as a botanist, then I will say, okay, where is the andrusium, where is the gynecium, how many carpels does it have, how many stamens does it have, which species does it belong to? And I can get a good amount of knowledge about that, but I won't relish the flower over there. If I want to relish the flower, I approach the flower in an aesthetic sense. Okay, how beautiful it is. How does the color composition meld, blend together? How is the shape of the petals? What is the softness? So, there is these two ways of approaching. The analytical way of approaching is largely the jnani way. The aesthetic way is the bhakta way. Now, analytical being jnani doesn't mean it has to be rejected. But it has to be subordinated eventually. So, here, when I gave these two examples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seeing every forest as Vrindavan, or the Vaikunthavasi seeing Vishnu as supreme, or the Dwarkavasi seeing Dwarka Krishna as supreme, this is the aesthetic vision. So in the Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami talks elaborately from the analytical point of view, and he establishes how Krishna is the source of all incarnations. But that is a point which is required for philosophical analysis. But when it comes to relishing, then it doesn't make a difference. And that's why the Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes that the Gopa Kumar himself is not satisfied with relating with Vishnu in Vaikuntha or with Dwarka Krishna. His heart longs for Vrindavan Krishna. But at the same time, he doesn't say that they are wrong. Neither Sanatan Goswami nor Gopa Kumar say that they are wrong. So, here when we are looking at the nature of spiritual reality, we have to understand that we need to go beyond our normal logical categories of right and wrong, and we have to have more of the aesthetic categorization of what is anukul for rasa and what is pratikul for rasa. So, whatever is anukul for rasa is accepted, and whatever is pratikul for the rasa is put aside. So now, that brings us to the point which has been of elaborate discussion and debate within our tradition itself, what to speak of outside our tradition. Now, this purport says that the gopis were married to their husbands, and then it says that their husbands were envious of Krishna. Now, the word used is actually jealous of Krishna. Now, we know that a soul who is jealous of Krishna cannot be there in the spiritual world. So, how can those who are residing right in the heart of the spiritual world, and they are also, the gopas are also associates of Krishna. So, how can they be jealous of Krishna? So, actually speaking, I'll focus first on what Jiva Goswami says in Gopal Champu and Bhakti Sandarbha. Then I'll talk about what Vishnachikha Thakur says in his 10th canto Sarath Darshini, and then we will try to reconcile what is being said. So, primarily, the spiritual world is the abode of rasa. Rasa means the experience of spiritual emotions. So, the love between Krishna and the gopis is extremely deep and powerful. And the depth and the power of that love is realized internally and expressed externally. When there is opposition, the depth and the power of their love is both ways, realized internally and expressed externally when there is opposition. And that's why in the spiritual world, as a part of the Leela, it appears as if there is opposition to their love, so that that love becomes deepened. And if elephant is extremely powerful, but when the elephant is tied by shackles, at that time, the elephant wants to go, say towards its mate or towards food or whatever. When the elephant is tied by shackles, which are very severe, which are very strong, then the elephant tries to pull apart. The elephant is caught with the desire of going towards a particular object. And when there is the shackles, then the elephant realizes its strength internally. You know, can I break apart the shackles? And then, when it breaks apart the shackles, two things happen. Actually, the elephant itself realizes, oh, I have so much strength that I can just break apart these shackles. I can even uproot the poles or the walls or the hill or the tree, whatever, to which the shackles are attached. And there is also external expression. People say, oh, how strong this elephant is. It just ripped apart everything. So, the elephant is giant, but its strength becomes realized internally and expressed externally when there is opposition. So, similarly in the spiritual world, no soul is actually inimical to Krishna.
all the souls in the spiritual world, especially those who are participating in Krishna's Leela, all of them love Krishna. But some of those souls, as a part of their loving service to Krishna, take an inimical role. And that inimical role, which creates obstacles in the loving pastimes between Krishna and the gopis, that does greater internal realization and greater external expression of their love. So that's why there are no souls who are actually jealous of Krishna. So this jealousy is transcendental. It is anukul to bhakti. Just as there is nobody who actually is a parent of Krishna. Now Krishna is sarvakarana karanam. He is the cause of all causes. He is the parent of everyone. But just as certain souls take the role of being parents of Krishna for the sake of rasa, similarly, certain souls take the role of being jealous of Krishna for the sake of rasa. So, actually speaking, everybody in the spiritual world loves Krishna. But in their love, there are different ways in which that love is expressed. And these oppositions that are there, they create variety and excitement in the spiritual world. Now the spiritual world is filled with dynamism, variety, excitement. That happens because it's not that everything there is very easy and always favorable to Krishna's pastimes. Favorable in an external sense. Ultimately everything is favorable. But because Krishna and the gopis, there are obstacles in their relationship. So therefore, what happens is, it appears as if that they have to struggle to overcome all those obstacles. And the struggle to overcome all those obstacles creates adventure, creates excitement. And that's how the rasa becomes intensified. So now, Jiva Goswami in our sampradaya, he was the most prominent scholar. And he had the responsibility of bringing intellectual and scriptural respectability to our tradition. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave the Siddhanta, and in his times he debated the most prominent scholars. But then he did not write any books. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not write any books, and in general the credibility of a tradition comes within the traditional Vedic context from various sources. The first, of course, is the charisma, the potency of the prominent teacher. But another very important way is by the caliber of the literature that are produced by the tradition. And that's why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent the Goswamis to Vrindavan to give this intellectual foundation for our tradition by writing books. So Jiva Goswami wrote four different kinds of books. So first was, he wrote philosophical books, which philosophically explained how Gaudiya Vaishnavism is the conclusion of the teachings of the Vedic literature. The Madhurya Ras in Parakiya Bhava in Vrindavan. So those are primarily his Sandarbhas. Those are his philosophical literature. Second was, he wrote books on grammar. That was the Harinamamrita Vyakaran and other books like that. So the books on grammar that he wrote are primarily for the sake of continuing the legacy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spiritualizing the study of Sanskrit. Then third, he wrote literature that were commentaries. Rupa Goswami wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Jiva Goswami commented on that and wrote Durgam Sangamani Tika. Like that he wrote several commentaries. And the fourth, which is of relevance to us, is that he elaborated on the pastimes of Krishna by writing books like Gopal Champu. So these are books of pastimes. So philosophical books, grammatical books, commentaries and pastimes. The four different kinds of books that he wrote. And through all these, he actually in different ways contributed to bringing about intellectual respectability for our tradition. So now, Jiva Goswami lived in Vrindavan, and Vrindavan was a place of conservative orthodoxy. And the idea of Krishna dealing with Krishna's dealings with the gopis, especially if the gopis are considered to be the wives of some other men. That was quite jarring even to the moral sentiments of the people at that time. So Jiva Goswami does an elaborate analysis, but he does it in various places. Like he's written the commentary on the Brahma Samhita also. In his Brahma Samhita commentary also, he goes into elaborate analysis to actually say that the gopis, were they married to somebody else? He says the gopis were pure, untouched, they were not married to anybody else. And how is that possible? In Gopal Champu, he does an elaborate amount of analysis, quoting from Vishnu Puran, from Bhagavatam and other places. It's a very scholarly analysis. I won't go into the reasoning here, but the technicalities of the reasoning, but I will talk about the overall thread of thought. So he explains the same point which I was telling, that Vrindavan is the abode of rasa. And whatever is required for enhancing the rasa, that is done over there. But when we consider the whatever is there for the sake of rasa to be tattva, then we make a mistake. So fundamentally, the gopis and Krishna are related to each other as wife and husband, as wives and husband. Because all souls are ultimately meant for the enjoyment of Krishna. All souls are the servants of Krishna. And the gopis are exalted devotees. So that means, fundamentally, there is an intimate relationship of devotee and the Lord between all devotees and Krishna, and especially between his most exalted devotees, the gopis and Krishna. And their relationship is in Madhurya Rasa. So he explains how actually the gopis in Vrindavan are non-different from the queens of Dwarka. Because the queens of Dwarka are basically expansions of the gopis. But he also explains in Vrindavan, there is something special that happens. So, the Vrajalila is more or less like a drama. Not drama in the sense that it is unreal, drama in the sense that it is an arena for heightened emotional expressions. So, in Vrindavan, so imagine that there is a husband and wife who are dutifully married to each other and they are happy together. But then there is a drama that is performed in which this couple, husband and wife, they play the role as if they are paramours. So actually they are husband and wife, but in the drama they play the role as if they are paramours. That means the wife is married to somebody else and then the wife has attraction towards the husband. And actually speaking, within the drama it is as if they are not married. And within the drama, that creates suspense, that creates excitement, that creates tension. So dramatic tension is created. So the same way it is in Krishna Leela. Actually, Krishna and the gopis are always, constitutionally, they are related to each other as devotees, as consorts. But within the setting of Raja, the setting is created as if the gopis are not married to Krishna. Now, Jiva Goswami describes that when Krishna becomes of a marriageable age in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, Krishna is eternally of the same age. There is eternal time which just keeps moving round and round so that there is variety in the pastimes, but there is no change. So there is no growth, there is no old age. Everybody in the spiritual world stays of the same age. In the material world, when Krishna manifests his pastimes, Krishna grows from childhood till youth. And then he doesn't grow beyond that. So when he is growing towards youth, when he comes to a marriageable age, so at that time, Gargamuni sends a message to Paurnamasi. And Paurnamasi decides that it is from the childhood itself, everybody understands that actually Krishna is meant to marry Radharani. And the whole of Raja is actually planning and dreaming and hoping for that union. But then, Paurnamasi and Gargamuni, they feel that, Gargamuni tells that Krishna will have to come out of Vrindavan to do his duties of protecting the world. And if Krishna leaves the gopis after he has married to them, that separation will be intolerable for them. So therefore, the Paurnamasi arranges in various ways to delay their marriage. And he delays the marriage. So then what happens? Jiva Goswami describes, he quotes from the Vishnu Puran, that actually Krishna eventually comes back to Vrindavan and he marries the gopis. Marries Radharani and all the gopis. So this is actually inferred from Vishnu Puran. where there are verses which talk about this, and Chakravarti Pad elaborates on this quite elaborately. So we'll look at these three points now. Krishna in Vrindavan before he left for Mathura and Dwarka, then Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka, and then Krishna's return. So before we go into this, we need to understand this fundamental point that actually everything that is happening is at the level of a divine eternal drama. Krishna and gopis are related to each other as husband and wife always. That is their conjugal rasa relationship. But external obstacles are created to make that rasa richer, deeper, stronger. So let's see how these obstacles are created and how they are removed. So it is arranged that because Krishna cannot marry the gopis and the gopis come of marriageable age, then it is decided let the gopis marry someone else. And then it is described that the gopis are completely heartbroken when they hear that they have to marry somebody else. And then at that time, Paurnamasi arranges something very mysterious. And actually, Jiva Goswami doesn't exactly reveal what has happened. So Vrinda Devi and Paurnamasi are discussing, it's going to be a disaster if the gopis get married to somebody else. All the gopis are meant for Krishna. How can they marry anyone else? Then Paurnamasi says, don't worry, I have an idea. And there, this happens in the the Purva Champu, in the Gopal Champu. But Jiva Goswami doesn't describe what has happened clearly. And then actually, at the end it is described, towards the last part of the Uttar Champu, last part of the book. So what? Paurnamasi says, I got some idea, and by this everything will be taken care of. And then she tells Vrinda Devi the idea secretly. And then they become very happy. And then Krishna leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura. And then when he comes back, at that time finally, so actually Krishna is living in Dwarka. He kills Shishupal. And then he is to kill Dantavakra. Now he comes back from Dwarka to Mathura. Mathura is very close to Vrindavan. So Krishna comes to Mathura to kill Dantavakra. And when he kills Dantavakra, after that, he comes back to Vrindavan. He comes back to Vrindavan and he stays for 2 months in Vrindavan. But the whole thing is arranged in such a way that for Krishna, time is under his control. And time can expand, time can contract. Krishna is performing Ras Lila with the gopis. He doesn't have to keep looking at a watch. Now time is over, I have to go now. Krishna wants to perform Ras Lila, he can just expand time. He can just expand time. In fact, Ras Lila, the one night of Ras Lila, he expanded it to be the one night of Brahma for so long. So when Krishna comes to kills Dantavakra and comes back, the Dwarkavasis feel as if Krishna has just gone to Mathura to kill Dantavakra and come back. But during that period, Krishna expands the sign that so there are 2 whole months he spends with the Vrajvasis. At that time when he goes there, he gets married to all the gopis, and then after that he takes all the gopis with him. And they all return back to the spiritual world. They all return back to the spiritual world. So now, when Krishna comes back to Vrindavan, it's a moment that the Vrajavasis have dreamt and cried tears for. And when Krishna actually comes, they are not able to believe it. But when they see Krishna, Maharaj Yashoda says, actually Krishna is there. And then, when Krishna says, now I have come back, now I killed all the demons, now I will never leave you. And the Vrajavasis can't believe their ears at that, and they're so overjoyed. And then, as parents are always, and when Krishna is back, then the gopis start thinking, the Vrajavasis start thinking, and the Mahayashadamai, now we should get Krishna married. And when they decide to get Krishna married, they go to Paurnamasi, and they start asking, whom should he marry, Krishna to Padma or the other gopis? And then Paurnamasi says, why are you not referring to Radha? Actually, it is Srila Prabhupada who coined the honorifics Srimati Radharani for Radha. The previous acharyas referred to her as Radha only. So, actually speaking, there are some Gaudiya Vaishnavas who say that this calling Radha as Srimati Radharani is rasabhas. Because actually she is simply in the mood of Vraja. She is a gopi. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted to emphasize that we should not see her cheaply. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would refer to her as Sri Radha sometimes. But this Srimati Radharani, this is Srila Prabhupada's unique rendition. So, Srila Prabhupada did that. because many Sahajiyas were there, and the Sahajiyas would take Radha Krishna's pastimes very cheaply. And they would refer to Radha in a very cheap sense. And that's why, you know, if, like when I read the Acharya's books and you just see the word Radha, it seems jarring to us. You know, we should use Srimati Radharani. That's what we are accustomed to because we have been reading Srila Prabhupada's books. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to emphasize that context of respectfulness so that we don't take the Vraja relationships very cheaply. Now, in contrast, Srila Prabhupada uses no honorific for Krishna. You know, there are people from other sampradayas who can't digest it. You know, some Bhagwan Krishna, Lord Krishna, something should be there. Now, Prabhupada has his own distinct honorific phrase, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when he's referring to Krishna, it's very rare that he will use Lord Krishna. He'll just say Krishna. When he's referring to Krishna in the third person, separately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he may say. So actually, the way Srila Prabhupada talked about Krishna and talked about Krishna with everyone, it was like Krishna is the person who he intimately knew and loved. And that's why Srila Prabhupada, we see in that poem that he wrote when he was going on Jaladuta. So he wrote two poems. So in the Markine Bhagavad Dharma was when he reached the coast of Boston, America. And another he wrote when he was on the journey. So in that other poem, he writes about Krishna is my very dear friend. And he says, I wonder what is there in Krishna. What is Krishna? We will go in the forest and we will play and we will roll in the grounds with Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada, you know, presented Krishna to the world as if Krishna is just like our best friend. Certainly is God, but he's also very intimate to us. So, Srila Prabhupada referred to Krishna and Radharani in these distinctive ways. The previous Acharyas, I said, I use the word Radha, and it might have jarred some people, because the previous Acharyas use it, in that context I was using it. But, then Purnamasi says, actually Krishna is meant to be married to Radharani. For the Vrajavasis, for Purnamasi, she is Radha, she is not Radharani. Purnamasi is much older. And for Yashodamai also, she is much older. So Yashodamai is older, Radharani is younger. So Krishna is meant to marry Radha. So Yashodamai says, yes, it is our heart's greatest desire that Krishna should be united with Radha. But that is not possible, because Radha is already married to someone else. So he says, no, that is not true. He says, what do you mean? He says, the marriage has been there. No, she has not been married to anyone. Radha is meant only for Krishna. And then he says, how is that possible? He said, you call an assembly of everyone in Vrindavan and I will show you a great miracle. And then all the Vrajavasis assemble. And when all the Vrajavasis assemble, then at that time, the Vrajavasis, they come along, and then actually Purnamasi arranges to show a mystical vision. And what is that mystical vision? Actually, Purnamasi, so all the gopis, they are in their houses with, apparently they are married to somebody else, so they are their husbands and the houses, and they come reluctantly here, they are seeing Krishna, and then suddenly Purnamasi does a mystical vision, and she sees, everybody sees all the gopis there again. So then people look towards Purnamasi, they see Radharani and Vishakha and Lalita, and they look behind and they see Radharani, Vishakha and Lalita, they are all two. Everybody is in duplets and everybody is stunned. What is this? Then Purnamasi explains. He says, this was actually the plan which was revealed to me so that the rasa could be maintained in both ways. So actually, just as Ravana could, Mr. Jiva Goswami gives this example, that just as Ravana, when he took Sita, he took a Maya Sita. So, actually he couldn't touch Sita. The real Sita was taken by Agnidev through his wife Swaha and kept safely with her. And then, when Ravana is killed, at that time, during the Agni Pariksha, Sita returns. The real Sita is returned. So similarly, it describes that, actually, Yogamaya says, I had created the duplicates of all the gopis. And those gopis were actually the persons who got married. So the real gopis are pure and they are untouched by anyone else. And they were never married to anyone else. And they are meant only for Krishna. And in that way, they all, then when they understand this, they all become very happy. And then the marriage of all these gopis with Krishna is arranged. It's a big celebration. Chapter upon chapter of Gopalachandra describes it. And then eventually, Krishna takes all the gopis and they return back to the spiritual world. And now, so in the spiritual reality, so Jiva Goswami goes to great labors to point out how there is nothing immoral in the relationship of Krishna with the gopis. And that is because there is tattva. At the level of tattva, the gopis and Krishna are married to each other eternally. They are consorts. In terms of leela also, in terms of rasa, whatever is required for enhancing the rasa is done. But even within that, there is no immorality, because the purity is protected by the arrangements of Yogmaya. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, while commenting on the same section, he refers to what Jiva Goswami is saying, and he also elaborates that actually the parkiya rasa. So now some people have, what happened is they sort of misunderstood Jiva Goswami's intention. So Jiva Goswami is not denying the reality of parkiya rasa. He is just pointing out that there is nothing, no immorality in the parkiya rasa. What is the parkiya rasa? The parkiya rasa is the idea that Krishna and the gopis, when they are, Krishna and his consorts, his conjugal devotees, when they are married to each other, that is swakiya rasa. That is Krishna with the queens in Dwaraka. Now Krishna with the gopis, apparently they are not married to each other. That is the parkiya rasa. So some people have concluded, or some people in the Gaudiya tradition and others, they felt that actually Jiva Goswami is saying there is no parkiya rasa in the spiritual world. That the gopis and Krishna are always married to each other. So actually how it is in the spiritual world, whatever is required for enhancing the rasa, that is there. So is the parkiya rasa there in the spiritual world? The parkiya rasa is actually the highest of all rasas. And that is definitely there in the spiritual world. But at the same time, everything in the spiritual world is of the highest moral standards. So that means Jiva Goswami has not denied the reality of parkiya rasa. He has explained how there is no immorality in the parkiya rasa. And in this way, what Chakravarti passes, the parkiya rasa is definitely there. The relationship out of wedlock, that is parkiya rasa, that is there in the sense of the leela. Just as in the sense of the leela, Krishna has a father, Krishna has a mother. Although in the sense of tattva, it does makes no sense to talk about Krishna having a father or a mother. So the problem comes up because, you know, when we talk about the male-female relationship in this world, it is always centered on selfish gratification. It is centered on selfish gratification. And we take that vision and apply it to the spiritual world. And then that, with that vision, we start seeing everything suspiciously. So when Krishna is relating with the mother and father, then that relationship seems pure, because that's a wonderful relationship, sweet relationship. But there doesn't seem to be much reason for misunderstanding that relationship. But when it comes to conjugal relationship, then there is scope for misunderstanding it. And that's why the acharyas go to great levels to explain the difference between material and spiritual. And you know, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives quite a demanding definition of the difference between kama and prema. He says, kama is the desire to satisfy one's own senses. Atmendri priti vancha. Tare bole kam. Krishnendriya priti cha dhare prema nam. So, now the definition of prema that he is giving is very interesting. He is saying that the desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna is called as prema. Now what does it mean? First of all, it's talking about selflessness. It's not talking about that I-centeredness, I want pleasure. Actually, it is to desire to give Krishna pleasure. But it also makes it clear, Krishnendriya Priti Vancha. So Krishna has senses. Krishna has a tongue. And Krishna, Radharani, serves Krishna by cooking hundreds of items for her. And she's satisfied by that service. So, there is a spiritual variety, there is spiritual reality, and the devotees in that spiritual variety and spiritual reality satisfy Krishna. And they desire to satisfy Krishna in a pure and selfless way. That is actually the essence of prema. And that prema is revealed to the highest extent in the love of the gopis for Krishna. So, now when we look at this, so I talked about the nature of spiritual vision, then I talked about the nature of spiritual reality. The nature of spiritual reality is that everything is arranged to intensify rasa. Then when we come to how do we adopt the spiritual vision in the material world? So, actually speaking, in the material world, we have to first of all learn to differentiate between matter and spirit. Now, first of all, this is material, this is spiritual. So, at a philosophical level, if we don't understand the difference between matter and spirit, then we can mistake the material to be the spiritual. And that is what the Sahajiyas do. The Sahajiyas, they often have their own idea of imitating Radha Krishna's pastimes, and they think that as long as we are thinking of Radha Krishna, actually whatever we are doing is also spiritual. No. First, before the basic spiritual vision that we need to adopt is, I am not the body, I am the soul. You know, before coming to ISKCON, I had read this Aham Brahmasmi so many times. It's a very common saying in anybody spiritual. Anybody who is spiritual, but actually it was Srila Prabhupada, he brought out in an emphatic way what is the implication. I am spirit means I am not the body. So that practically nobody talks about it. Yes, I am spirit, you are eternal, fine. But then yes, somehow you are the spirit also and you are the body also. It's some mysterious idea is there. So especially, you know, within the, this has come to the Vedic tradition also to some extent. Within Christianity, the idea is, you know, the heaven is just like a continuation of this material world without the problems of the material world. So all our relatives who are long lost, they are back. So for example, C.S. Lewis wrote a set of novels called The Books of Narnia. And in that, he's describing how everybody ultimately goes back to heaven. So there is a lion who is considered to be the representative of Jesus. So the point, it's off track, but the point I'm making is that at the end when everybody goes back to heaven and they say we reached heaven and we found that heaven was just like London. So the idea is that their conception of the spiritual world is just like a continuation of this world without the problems of this world. But the essential of what makes the spiritual world spiritual is not just the absence of problems. It is the presence of Krishna consciousness. And to intensify Krishna consciousness, there may be problems also. When we say Vaikuntha, the place that is free from anxiety. So what does it mean? Now actually when Radharani is cooking for Krishna, it is said she cooks on dozens and dozens of stoves. She wants to make every single item the best for Krishna. So, now, she is not very peaceful and detached. You know, she is anxious. Let every item come out nicely. When Yashoda Mai is concerned where Krishna is he doing some mischief? She is not just peaceful. She is anxious. So, when we say Vaikuntha, when we say free from anxiety, the spiritual world is free from material anxieties. The anxieties that agitate our mind and take us away from Krishna further. Those anxieties are not there. Spiritual anxieties actually intensify our remembrance of Krishna. So in the writings of the Goswamis, there is a prayer of Radharani. And Radharani is saying, Krishna, I prefer separation from you to union with you. Because when I am united with you, I see you in one place. But when I am separated from you, I see you everywhere. So this is what is happening here. You know, they are seeing the deer and they are seeing Krishna. So actually speaking, if we consider material and spiritual, all material emotions are like poison. Poison in the sense that they make us forget Krishna. So material pleasure is like sweet poison. And material pains are like bitter poison. But both of them are like poison. Whereas spiritual emotions are like nectar. And union with Krishna is like sweet nectar. And separation from Krishna is like bitter nectar. But that it is nectar. So nectar actually is the remembrance of Krishna. And in the spiritual world, there is no forgetfulness of Krishna. There is constant remembrance of Krishna, and even the anxiety that is there, that intensifies the remembrance of Krishna. So jealousy. So it is said here that apparently some of the gopas who are apparently married to the gopis who are actually in the relationship with Krishna, they are jealous of Krishna. But this jealousy is anukun to bhakti. This jealousy is actually based on the platform of what will enhance the pastimes of Krishna the most. And in that sense, it is also for Krishna sweet. It increases the excitement of the pastimes. So when we are in the material world, we have to first of all begin by differentiating between matter and spirit. That if there is no clear understanding of the difference between matter and spirit, then we can just confuse the material to be the spiritual. But once there is this clear philosophical understanding, this is matter and this is spirit, but when it comes to the spiritual level, we have to recognize that there is room for subjectivity within devotional service. Subjectivity means, I'll talk about two things primarily over here. You know, now, Srila Prabhupada, he said in his famous speech on the Vyas Puja of Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur, he says that the Guru is one, but the Guru manifests in many manifestations. So, now in ISKCON, we have many spiritual masters. And now for the disciple, the spiritual master may be a source of great inspiration. Now for others, let's say, those who are not the disciples of that spiritual master, they may find, okay, he's a senior devotee, very inspiring devotee, but they may not have the same vision. I don't feel him. That person is so inspiring. So actually speaking, as long as all of the spiritual masters serving Krishna, as long as all of them are dedicated to Srila Prabhupada's teachings, then we understand that they are capable of delivering souls from the material world as instruments of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. So there is, you know, I will find my spiritual master to be inspiring, and others will find their spiritual master to be inspiring. And this is the room for actually transcendental subjectivity. That means, it may be possible that one disciple may not find some other spiritual master so inspiring. We wonder, but that disciple find that spiritual master so inspiring. When we don't understand this whole concept of transcendental subjectivity, then there is the whole issue that my guru is better than your guru, or you should take a decision from my guru, not from that guru. So all that happens because we are trying to drag spiritual reality down to the material level. So actually all the different spiritual masters are representing Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. And the important point is not which specific spiritual master a devotee gets connected with. It is how the person is inspired to connect with Krishna. Ultimately, you know, people can have as potent a spiritual master as Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur or Srila Prabhupada, and still they may have problems in their spiritual life. That is because ultimately the spiritual advancement of an individual depends on that individual. The spiritual master definitely offers mercy, and with that mercy the disciple can make advancement. But it is the disciple who has to take responsibility, who has to take initiative, who has to take up commitments. So, if some other devotee is inspired by some other spiritual master, then it is not for me to dissuade or disturb that person's faith. I have to understand that it is the same Krishna who is manifesting through that person. You know, this was what Srila Prabhupada's attitude was. And Srila Prabhupada was enormously successful in sharing Gaudiya Vaishnavism all over the world. When he came back to Vrindavan and Mayapur, unfortunately some of his godbrothers, they couldn't digest, because Srila Prabhupada had, during Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur's times, he had been just a sideline grahastha. And he was never among the prominent leaders. And such a person to become the most prominent representative of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the most respected among the disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur, that they found it difficult to digest. So Srila Prabhupada told his disciples, now sometimes they would hear the criticism of Prabhupada from his godbrothers, and Prabhupada would be pained by that criticism. Prabhupada would say that, you know, if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur chooses to fulfill his instructions through one of his disciples, then why are they seeing me separate from Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur? It is not that I am doing something separate. I am fulfilling the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur. So, that connection we should be able to see. That connection is that actually all the spiritual masters are inspiring souls to come towards Krishna. And how they become inspired, that's important of course through which particular representative, but at the same time, what we should be seeing is that they are becoming inspired, they are becoming committed in their Krishna consciousness. And as long as that is happening, you know, we don't have to feel that I have to impose my spiritual master on others, nor should I feel threatened if others are inspired by their spiritual master. But there is room for transcendental subjectivity, and that does not in any way change the strength of our relationship with Krishna through our spiritual master. So, the same applies to our services to Krishna. Now, all of us will over a period of time be inspired to do different kinds of services. Now, Srila Prabhupada, when he would go, he would say that, if he would go to New Vrindavan where they were developing farm community, Prabhupada would say that, this is the most important service that can do. And then he would tell book distribution, this is the most important service that you can do. And then he would tell those who are running the Gurukul is the most important service. Now what does it mean? Actually, all services are important. And the important point is to recognize that Srila Prabhupada gave different definitions of success for different devotees according to their natures. So for a person who's very interested in book distribution, distributing books is the definition of success. For somebody who is developing a Gurukul or is training the next generation of ISKCON, the children, that will be a definition of success. So in general, when we are associating with devotees, those devotees whose definition of success is similar to ours, we can gel very easily with them. We can relate with them. Of course, we can become envious of them also very easily. But basically what happens is, our emotional circles and their emotional circles, they intersect. But for some devotees whose definition of success, it is within the realm of Krishna consciousness only, but it may be a very different definition of success. So for some example, somebody's definition of success is to build a very big temple. And that's what they're thinking constantly. And then we have counselor meetings and programs for training and cultivating devotees and seminars on Vaishnava relationships. He says, where is the temple? Where is the temple? No, there are different definitions of success. So even with respect to this, we shouldn't impose our definition of success on others, nor should we feel threatened by others' definitions of success. Now, as long as what the service that we are doing is within the jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness, is with the guidance and the knowledge and the blessings of our spiritual authorities, we go on. And this is what will actually bring variety. Now, there are different kinds of people, they will feel inspired in different ways, and when they serve Krishna in different ways, that will attract different kinds of people to Krishna. So, I'll conclude with one anecdote from Srila Prabhupada. So, when the devotees were doing book distribution, some devotees were very good at book distribution. When they were going around and distributing books, Prabhupada was very pleased. So, once they came to Prabhupada and they said that, Prabhupada, we have found that there are certain techniques and tactics for book distribution. You know, there are certain sentences that we can speak, certain expressions, certain ways of talking, and that makes people take the books. So can we go around temple to temple to temple telling these techniques, and then your book distribution can go on enormously. So they expected Srila Prabhupada to be very pleased, but Prabhupada became very grave. And Prabhupada said, you know, this devotional service is individual, voluntary and spontaneous. When a soul feels inspired to serve Krishna, then devotional service is performed. So, inspire devotees to serve Krishna. There's no need to tell them the techniques. So, devotional service is individual, voluntary and spontaneous. Every soul is an individual. Every soul has to voluntarily choose to serve Krishna. And spontaneous doesn't mean that suddenly we can go to Raganuga Bhakti. But spontaneous means here, spontaneous essentially means over here that actually the soul has to feel inspired to serve Krishna. And then, so Srila Prabhupada recognized that different devotees would have different natures, and we cannot standardize things in bhakti. What we can actually do is inspire others. And they, according to their nature, according to their inclination, they'll find ways to serve Krishna. So again, when we find our way to serve Krishna, then we need to be satisfied with that, because we'll have a particular definition of success. And whatever definition of success we have in our service, we be satisfied with that. So, that way we will be satisfied. Otherwise, if we are just comparing our service with somebody else's, then we will be dissatisfied. You know, if a devotee who is a preacher is comparing the service with a fundraiser, you know, the devotee will think, what am I doing studying Shastra? I should go and raise funds. No, if somebody wants to become a Shastric scholar, you should understand, my definition of success should be that I understand the scriptures deeply. Somebody else will have some other definition of success. So, it will take time for us to discover our own understanding of how we should best serve Krishna. But over a period of time, all of us will discover it. And then we can march ahead in spiritual life, steadily. And in that way, we will have various devotees who are successful in their own ways in serving Krishna. And that way, there will be so much variety of attractiveness for people who are coming towards Krishna. Because they will see that there are so many different individuals and they are all inspired to serve Krishna and they are all happy in serving Krishna and they are all successful in their own ways. And the magnetic pull of that, there is nothing, no amount of preaching that can substitute for that. So this is the way we actually see spiritual reality. This is how we see the spiritual reality from the, we have a spiritual vision in the material world also. So I'll summarize. I started by talking about the nature of spiritual reality is that we don't focus so much on what the objective reality is as much on how much potential it has to remind us of Krishna. So, then I discussed that in the nature of spiritual reality is that, so for this I discussed the past, the incident of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looking at any forest and thinking it to Vrindavan. Then the nature of spiritual reality is such that everything is arranged so that the rasa is maximized. So the fact that certain gopas seem to be jealous of Krishna, that is just an arrangement made to ornament the pastimes of Krishna. And then we discussed how the spiritual reality is very, very profound and often inconceivable. How the gopis are married to Krishna in terms of their constitutional relationship. But at the same time, in terms of the dramatic relationship, the gopis are in the parakiya bhav. Then we discussed how Jiva Goswami described everybody got married. And lastly, we discussed how to have spiritual vision, incorporate this transcendental subjectivity in our dealings in the material world. So, devotees can have different gurus, devotees can have different services with their own definitions of success. And we don't feel threatened by those definitions. At the same time, we don't impose our own definitions. And this way we can have multitudes of devotees who are happily serving Krishna. Thank you very much. Is there any one question? Karan, any comment? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai. Itai Gaur Premanande.